Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Hope you're having hope you're having a great day. We got an outstanding show for you. Shane Bacon. Bacon. Will join us in a half hour, get his thoughts on the PGA Championship and the Broken Trophy. Joel Klatt will join us in an hour and a half. Lead college football analyst for Fox Sports. His take on the state of college football, which is very much up in the air. And Rick Bucher will join us half past the 5 p.m. hour on the East Coast, 2 p.m. hour on the West Coast. We'll get his thoughts on the bubble, which has burst for one Zion Williamson. Lot to get to. I don't think it's hard for me to pick which topic to begin with, right? This is not one of those days where on a Monday I'm like, man, I got too much. I got one really, really good topic, and it's really interesting because there's this confluence of issues. The Big Ten, which had been rumored to have voted already to cancel the college football season, has not had an official vote from presidents and chancellors. President Trump tweeted out that the student athletes have been working too hard for their season to be canceled. He did the hashtag We Want to Play. That was started by Trevor Lawrence, who is the presumptive number one overall pick. He was a national champion at Clemson. And he took to Twitter yesterday to say that he wants to play, and kind of echoing my sentiments for the last month or two, which is, you understand it's not completely safe, but you're actually more safe on a college campus than you are if you go home. And here's why. Many of the top players and coaches in college football in the country have supported the idea of playing this season. This is Ohio State head coach Ryan Day. He said, swinging as hard as we possibly can right now for these players. This isn't over. Hashtag fight. Jim Harbaugh had a lengthy statement today about why they should have football this fall as well. Like, there's a lot to get to. I'll give you my take. It's fascinating. When we say it's about the money, everyone says, well, that's the wrong tack. That it's, we should be against it being about the money. It should be about being the right thing. But if it's football, it's never truly the right thing, right? Like, we all go in knowing full well that among the major sports, it is far and away the most dangerous to the body and to the mind, and the numbers back it up as such. So we, to operate on one hand, like safety is the primary concern and that money is the only reason that overcomes safety, I think is would mean that anytime you play football, you're only playing for the money, and that's not accurate. There's this misconception that if players were getting paid, they would want to play more. First of all, players, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, you may not like the level of compensation or the value of the trade. I would tell you it's far more valuable than how it's portrayed by people who don't appreciate the value of it. But you may think that. You're allowed to think that. Hey, man, they need a better deal. Okay. I think the deal is good, and it continues to get even better. And for 99% of the players, it's incredible. Incredible. And the other 1%, it's incredible in all the benefits it pays off to them in terms of popularizing them, making them a part of the conversation, and really marketing them for their next job in the NFL and for when they're done playing football. But what I don't understand, because it is false, is players get nothing. They're playing for free. They're not playing for free. They're not playing for nothing. You playing pickup basketball is for free. You playing football with the guys, Turkey Bowl on Thanksgiving, that's for free. Getting a chance to enroll in go to school in, have all the benefits of a major university, as well as all the training that goes with it, all the tutoring that goes with it, all the other benefits that go with it, has a substantial value. You may say that value isn't enough, and you can make your argument. And there are points which I may actually agree with you on, but I will never agree with somebody who says the players get nothing. You get a ton. You might not get enough. But what's ironic is the players want to play already. Like, there's a disconnect between people at home, even former players, and guys who are writers. And, well, if they got paid, no. If they got paid and they were professional, if they got paid, then if they didn't want to show up, they could be fired for it. Or if they couldn't show up and the season was canceled, they could be furloughed. That's what happens at big boy jobs. But the fact is, you can't be furloughed. Now you can't even really be fired as long as you don't have a fireable offense. And everything that colleges are supposed to do is in an effort to keep you on track to graduate on time. Coaches get rewarded as such. Matter of fact, that's one of the idiocies of the Pac-12 coalition, which wasn't really a coalition of nearly as many players, they say, in terms of the bonuses that they want. Of course you should give bonuses to coaches when their student athletes succeed in school. Why shouldn't they? Pushes you to get guys to get better grades and to graduate on time. But we're at this weird place, this weird kind of crossroads where, look, I've been told that one of the things the Big Ten is examining is whether or not that there's this data that says, hey, there's a possibility that when players get COVID, it's not about dying or hospitalization. It's about what the rest of their life looks like. That would also open them up to, you know, liability out the wazoo. Most everyone knows if you have a pulse that you're actually safer on a college campus being watched over by team doctors, by your coaches, by your peers to not violate whatever protocols you have in place. Most people know that, and the numbers would support as such. The difference is when you're on a college campus, you are under the watchful eye of that university, and your parents could sue that university if something happened to you, God forbid. So what college football is doing is the old CYA, cover their booties. I mean, we didn't say booties with A. And it's going to be amazing to see how this plays out. Now you get the president putting himself on one side. You have players, many of whom don't normally agree with the president. I'm sure they will accept the president's backing. Like, look, do I think they play? I think it's really, really hard. Really, really hard to take in all this data, to be thoughtful to social media and the media, and do it anyway. But you know what? You probably got to do it anyway. Most people cower to it. They cow to it. The unintended consequences are severe. There's not any question that players will suffer from depression, that players will, many of whom, you know, will struggle to go back to school, to stay in shape, or even to stay healthy, because if you're doing online learning, you're going to do it at home. Look, I'm respectful of how bad this virus is. I am not going to sit here and tell you that it's nothing more than the seasonal flu. That's lunacy, right? That's spitting in the face of doctors and scientists that spend their lives researching this stuff. But there's cost benefit analysis to any deal that you make. There's a benefit analysis to playing as opposed to not playing. And if you want to say it's about money, sure. Schools are still going to lose money, their books will be off regardless, probably a little bit less so if they play, but there's all sorts of other costs which we don't understand will be incurred if they do play. The testing, the safety, the protocols, you know, what you do inside of a stadium, all of these different things. And we're left here with a complete mess. And I understand that there's this idea that we want leadership. The problem is that we are such a divided country on every single topic that leadership cannot do its job. The president says something and half the country disagrees. And that's not just this president. That's the previous president as well. And the president previous to that. I'm old enough to know that this is how it has. This is how it has been. Is it more polarizing? Yeah. But now sports is like that. School is like that. There are schools that are in session. SEC schools have students on campus. Now, they're trying to navigate this thing and work for it on the fly, and they have their own protocols in place. But there are some schools which won't open, some schools that are open, some schools that are halfway. So it makes it for an impossible moving target. And to people who are like, man, there should be one college football czar in charge of everything. It's seemingly impossible when you have such different perspectives. And no matter what you say, half of the country is going to disagree with you. So I look at this thing and I'm like, what a mess. But as with all things, we can also point out that we reap what we sow. We just do. We reap what we sow. All right, coming up next, it's official. I think an NBA team with championship hopes needs to be very worried.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. This is what I don't like. I like Todd Furman. He's a friend. He's on Lock It In. He tweets out, universities are rarely concern themselves with the well-being of their student-athletes. I'm not buying the decision to cancel the football season. It's about the player safety. I imagine it's more about optics and liability than anything. Like, look, the first thing is, that's complete BS, the idea that universities don't spend their time thinking about their students and their student-athletes. Like, you just, I understand that you want to believe that everyone in power is bad. Anybody who's in bad power, bad. Non-power, good. But, okay, so if you're a student athlete, let's just understand all of the things that you have at your disposal, right? You have a team doctor at your disposal. You have a team trainer. You have a strength coach, a position coach, an academic staff. Right, you have a head academic advisor and a tutor as well. I'm at six right now. Six. Most schools have some form of dietitian. Right? When you have a training table, there's a chef that is simply dedicated to student athletes' meals. And at most of these schools, you know, within reason, you can go and say like, "Hey man, could you think about throwing in some salmon there on Wednesdays?" That's a great idea. We'll do some salmon on Wednesdays. How do you like it made? Right? Like, you have all of, and then you have your head coach. And I know that you think, because you've seen movies, that the head coach is, you know, he wears bike shorts and an old polo with a big collar and has a whistle and says "some bitch" all the time, right? That's what you think. And some of that is true, but they actually usually care about their players. And maybe they don't care about them because they care about them. Maybe because they care about them because those players recruit the next wave of players. But they do care about their players. But the worst part is that you have guys that have never spent time in a college football or college basketball locker room or coach's office making assumptions about the level of care and percentage of times that they're thought of within a university. Which is, you know, that's me commenting on what it must be like to work at Tesla. Well, I know what Elon Musk says, and I know the cars really well. It must be this to work there. I have no idea. No idea. All right, I got this. This is some bad news for one NBA team that has championship aspirations. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. I think the Lakers should be very worried about their championship title hopes. They're the worst shooting team in the bubble, and though they can navigate some of that and work through some of that and rest some of their guys and get fresher legs, like, look, if you don't have a point guard, there's very few things you can hide less than not having a point guard. And if you look at their plan was to have Darren Collison. He announced his retirement. Then they went to Avery Bradley and Rajon Rondo. Rondo is over the hill. he's never been a good shooter. He's not a good fit with LeBron. He probably shouldn't have been brought back. And they thought if they signed Collison middle of the season, they would release Rondo. Now Rondo's hurt and Avery Bradley opted out. So what are you left with? You're left with guys that play hard. You have one guy that's great on defense and one guy that's great on offense, and neither that can really play 40 minutes. That's what you got. And the Lakers are, it's especially in this league, think about who they're going to have to potentially go through. You know, if you're playing Houston and you have a point guard, he's going to match up with, you know, either James Harden or Russell Westbrook and get destroyed. You know, if you play the Portland Trailblazers, you're talking about going against Damian Lillard. I love Alex Caruso. I love the Quinn Cook story. Neither are starting point guards, and once you have a backup or even a third point guard that's playing starting minutes, they get exposed. They get exposed. You know, and then you factor in they're playing Kentavious Caldwell-Pope a bunch of minutes, and he's one of those good player on a bad team, average player on a good team. Danny Green looks over the hill like it's not great. But the biggest thing is, once you get several layers deep on a point guard position, it becomes almost a house of cards. Now you have LeBron playing strictly the point guard, LeBron trying to get everybody involved but doesn't have good enough players to get them involved, LeBron not playing that well himself because he's not a spring chicken, he can't carry a team the way he used to. Anthony Davis has never been beyond the second round of the NBA playoffs. You've got a lot of stuff working against you. But the point guard thing, that one, if I'm the Lakers, has got to give me a lot of pause.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Let's welcome in Shane Bacon. Bacon. Of course, Shane Bacon, you know, he's trying to qualify for the U.S. Open. What made that course a different challenge than others?
I just feel like, you know, it was unpredictability with the lies. You know, I talked to a couple of players early in the week before the tournament got going, and it was a lot about just guesswork on what was going to happen if you missed the fairways. And it's also, you know, they brought those fairways at Harding Park in so much that everybody was going to miss fairways. You know, it wasn't like there's going to be a guy out there, you know, hitting 75 or 80% of the fairways for the week. I mean, even the straightest of drivers were going to find it because, you know, a lot of the fairways cantered. So it was always just going to be on what kind of lie you got. You know, if you hit it in the rough, was it going to be sticky? Was it going to jump? Was it going to sink down? And we kind of saw all of that, you know, throughout that final round from all the players. I mean, it was such a bunch leaderboard. But what's so wild about the day was I felt like the golf course looked like it played difficult. And then you look at some of these stats after. I mean, the field scoring average in that final round was the lowest in the history of the PGA Championship.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It felt tough, but, you know, it really kind of played easy for those guys.
Yeah, I mean, not point out, I know it was a day in which we didn't have Tiger, but Tiger shot a 67 yesterday. He played quite well. Obviously, he was, you know, it was earlier in the week, especially Friday, which undid him in terms of his chance of competing. Let's start with Tiger Woods. Was it simply his putting left him for a couple of days, or were his approaches putting him in spots where it made it for harder putts?
Yeah, just didn't putt well. I mean, you know, he had that new putter in the bag. And the one thing that we have seen with Tiger over the years is when he changes things, especially equipment, you know, it's really considering how little amount of tournament play he plays, you know, to get that, use that putter in a practice round, to use that putter when you're warming up, you know, that's all great. But it's a completely different beast when you're under the gun and every putt matters. And we saw a lot of kind of wishful strokes from Tiger, you know, in the middle of the tournament, you know, that Friday and Saturday. So it was just bad putting week. I mean, if he rolled in a few more, you know, he would have been somewhere in the 20 to 25 range on the leaderboard. But I did never feel like he was really contending throughout the week. He hit it fine. It's just, you know, you got to roll in 10 footers to win major championship, and he made none for two rounds.
What happened to Brooks Koepka yesterday?
I mean, you talk about confounding. That was maybe the most surprising. You know, Doug, I'm fine with any athlete, you know, using their platform or using what they've done historically to kind of chest up against everybody else. What I've found so weird about the way Koepka's changed over the last 8 months, 10 months, year, is that it's not just I'm an athlete, this doesn't get to me. I'm not nervous in major championships. Look at my resume. It felt like he's really kind of just started to go after players. And what he said on Saturday night about the field and kind of dismissing Dustin Johnson. I mean, Dustin Johnson won a U.S. Open at Oakmont. You know, Oakmont's the hardest golf course on the planet. And Dustin Johnson won it while he was dealing with a rules issue in the middle of the final round. So, I mean, to kind of dismiss that and say the and talk the way he talked about everybody on that leaderboard, considering how many great players there were in contention, granted, not a lot of major winners, but great players. I mean, you had Jason Day and Justin Rose, and as we know, Colin Morikawa in there, a lot of young, great players. I didn't really understand it, and I've always felt like the best athletes in the world, you know, they'll talk trash occasionally, but they understand that the trash they're talking will be backed up by play. And Koepka's changed this. You know, Doug, he shot 74 three of the last four major final rounds. I mean, it's not like he's a guy that's gone out there and shot 65, you know, every Sunday. I mean, this is, in a weird way, becoming a little bit of a trend.
Shane Bacon joining us, Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. There's been so much talk of Bryson DeChambeau because of how long, you know, he is off the tee, but also how well he's played up until this point. Now that he played four rounds, what's your reaction to his first major since becoming a major force?
Yeah, I mean, it was I'd say probably an A minus for the week for him. You know, he had no top tens in majors. He finished T4 this week. I didn't really feel like he hit it great. And I didn't feel like he putted it great, and still to finish in the top five, I think, was a win for him. I mean, he's looking to win this championship, of course, but as we know in golf, you know, there's a lot more winners than the guy that walks away with the big trophy and occasionally drops part of the trophy at that. But, you know, for Bryson, I felt like, all in all, a pretty good week, considering I don't think he had his best stuff.
Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, so now I'm confused with the schedule. What's next? When's the next major? It's coming up pretty quick, isn't it?
Yeah, we got the U.S. Open in mid-September, and then the Masters in November. And before all that, we'll have the playoffs coming up in 2 weeks. It's pretty bunched, you know. I mean, a lot of big stuff with everybody in the field. So there is kind of – this is really normally the part of the year where we, you know, leave golf. You know, this is normally the final major of the year, the final time when the majors played. And now we're still going to get a whole bunch for the next couple months, so it should be pretty fun.
How good was Phil in the booth? Did you get to watch Phil in the booth at all?
It's unbelievable. I mean, you know, I mean, listen, was there any surprise he was going to be good at that? But, you know, comes right in, throws a couple jabs at Faldo. It was awesome. I wish he would have come in there on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, he was outstanding. The dad sex joke was a little, I mean, I'm sure those guys at CBS were like, whoa. And I love the fact that, like, Nance completely got it. Faldo had no idea what he was talking about. Zero.
And the best part was that Faldo brought it up a day later. You know, he brought up the whole on Sunday's telecast. Well, if his kids were watching, they might have been a bit uncomfortable. You're like, hey man, the joke passed at this point. It's that, you know, it's that meme online where the joke flies over the little stick figure's head. That was Faldo up until Sunday.
U.S. Open's at Wingfoot. Of course, Phil should have won there last time the U.S. Open was there. Who does that course set up well for?
Colin Morikawa. I mean, a guy that hits his irons like, you know, 2000 Tiger. I mean, it's going to be a golf course with nasty rough. You know, Wingfoot, I think, is probably in the Shinnecock Oakmont top three of toughest U.S. Open venues. So the rough will be gnarly. Greens are really, really tough. Somebody that can, you know, get the ball close with 5, 6, 7 irons is going to have a lot of success. So somebody like Colin Morikawa, I mean, this is going to be a kid that I'm not saying he's going to win 5 majors or 10 majors, but he's going to be one of those guys that's in the hunt a lot on the weekend, and it's just because he hits the ball so well. So I feel like somebody like Morikawa can lean on his, you know, on his skills that we haven't really seen since kind of Tiger with his irons. I mean, that's why he's so great. And so I feel like a straight hitter that gets the ball in the fairway and kind of can lean on the better part of their game, being their iron play, is going to have a lot of success at Wingfoot.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think in the general public, there's a massive misconception about Tiger Woods, right? Like, greatest iron player ever is what golfers tell me. Whereas I think those of us meatheads, like people in my position, usually like, well, you know, he used to just dominate with his driver and outdrive people. Like, yeah, there was more to it than that. Sure, he used to hit a long way, and that allowed him to play, you know, his eights and nines, you know, and wedge. But he was unbelievable with his eights and nines and wedges. And then 6 feet in, he was a money putter. So there was more to it than just he hit it a long way back in the day.
Yeah, you know what I've heard from pros about Tiger and what they all say. I mean, if you ask any professional golfer that played with Tiger back in the day or that has seen Tiger now, you know, what they always tell me is he's the best ever at controlling his distance with his iron. So even if he misses an iron a little left or a little right, it's hole high. And that's what all these pros are trying to do. They're trying to dial in their irons to where they, no matter if they hit it a little offline, it's still going to be on the green. Maybe it's 15 feet left or 15 feet right. You can make those putts for birdie, and you're not going to make bogeys. And that's what they've always said Tiger was unbelievable at. And when you talk about Morikawa, who just won, you know, Colin Morikawa did a TrackMan test. TrackMan's the device that all these guys use now that'll tell you spin rate and smash factor and all this stuff that's probably too complicated to explain on the radio. But he did a TrackMan test in college at Cal, and he was more consistent with his 6-iron in terms of how much he missed his dispersion than almost all the top-level college players were with their wedges. So that's a guy that's going to have a lot of success, because if you hit your irons on the button every time and you miss few greens, you're just not going to have a lot of bogey opportunities on these golf courses. And if you don't make bogeys, you're going to be in contention.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that sounds easy enough. I can't not make a bogey. That's my problem. My problem is I put myself in position for a birdie and then I 3-putt. Right? Like, just put me down for a bogey. That's probably what was going to happen anyway. Like, I get to the green, I just figure, just put me down for 3-putt. I'll be fine. And a 3-putt sometimes, even sometimes that is generous. Okay. So what's your deal? Right? Like, we sold golf. Are we selling you too? Do you get sold?
I hope nobody sells me. I mean, I've got a couple podcasts. You know, I started a podcast this year with Max Homa, who's a PGA Tour player and a fan favorite of anybody that follows him on social media. And that podcast is called Get a Grip, and it's done really well, and it's fun hearing. As you guys know, it's fun when you hear from an actual athlete like J.J. Redick does in the NBA, you know, where they tell you what's going on in their world as they're playing in it. So I got a couple of golf podcasts focused on that, and then what's been really cool with Fox is they've given me the opportunity to do stuff outside of golf. You know, I've had a chance to do some NFL and some college basketball and the Westminster Dog Show, for goodness sakes. I mean, how could I ever forget about that? Best week of my life. So, you know, I've had an opportunity to do some other stuff and hoping that continues even without the USGA contract.
Am I crazy that the tournament was a better watch without the fans?
You know, I've got a friend of mine that has just for years preached that golf would be a better sport without fans. What's interesting about no fans there is where professional golfers miss golf shots is where the fans stand. So if you see a guy like John Rahm miss a fairway by 5 yards, he's going to be where the fans are standing. So he's typically going to draw a decent lie. And what was great about this week in particular, considering it was a major championship, is the rough was gnarly. And if you missed it there, you didn't have the luck of hoping, you know, Jerry, the 300-pound golf fan, was standing right there 2 minutes before and you got a great lie. So I'm with you. I'm okay with no fans at golf events. I think it looks great, but I know the golfers in general are excited to get them back, because I know when you make a 50-footer like Justin Thomas did a few weeks ago and nobody cheers, it's a little awkward.
It is a little awkward. I also think you appreciate the golf course more, right? Like I what happens is they always go back to the stock aerial footage, right? And they show it, and here's the drone going over it, and you're like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like that because the cameraman can go anywhere and can show you, you know, they can take a look at the entire course. I just think it gives you a much better sense of things. Whereas otherwise, you got people lining all the fairways, it may not give you nearly the same feel. I also, you know, I hate the you to man, be the ball, get in the hole, right? Like, I got it. They're all kind of cliche. And you know, some of the hot, you know, there was a hot mic incident yesterday or whatever, last minute, couple minutes on ESPN. I think more mics and more interaction where it feels like there's really a twosome, you know, playing golf and they're chatter with their caddy. I think all of that stuff is better for the sport. That would be one viewer's opinion.
Yeah, well, I mean, you get a better feel of who the players are, right? I mean, if you hear them laughing, joking, you know, talking about how terrible a golf shot was, that's the stuff, the natural sound you're going to get from players. You know, that's one thing that our producer at Fox, Mark Loomis, implemented early on that people complained about to start because they thought it sounded weird when the ball went in the cup. But putting those microphones in the cups allowed us to hear the players up around the greens talk about the putt, talk about the break, you know, give the read to their caddy. You know, Dustin Johnson famously that was where we got all that audio at Oakmont when he was dealing with the ball moving on that green. So, right. Yeah, I mean, I feel like we hear so much more from the players. And if it's an occasional F-bomb, it's an occasional F-bomb. I mean, we've all said it on the golf course before. I don't understand why we always have to apologize when an athlete cusses. I just always find that funny.
Well, that's why they named it golf, right? Because all the other four-letter words were taken anyway. So
that's right.
Shane, great stuff, man. Look forward to the podcast and working with you some more. Thanks so much for joining us.
Always. Appreciate it.
That's my man, Shane Bacon, who's outstanding at golf as a player, as an analyst, as a broadcaster, and of course, broadcasts all kinds of other golf stuff and other stuff here for us at Fox Sports. President Trump wants college football this season. Big deal, little deal, or no deal? Huge. Find out next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live. This is Game Time.
It's Game Time.
On the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Dan, what do you got?
All right, Doug, we have on this Monday...
Big deal, little deal, no deal.
All right, big deal, little deal, or no deal that President Trump tweeted in support of Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence and other college football players wanting to play today with a retweet with comment and then also adding another tweet, play college football. Is it a big deal, little deal, or no deal?
I think it's a big deal. You know, like anytime you don't have to like him, you don't have to agree with him, but you will agree with he's the leader of the free world and he put his support behind a players driven movement. It's a big thing. That's a big deal.
Big deal, little deal, or no deal that Nebraska head football coach Scott Frost said today that they want to play a Big Ten schedule, but are prepared to, quote, look at other options.
Well, he also went on to say that they estimate that if Nebraska estimates they'll lose between $80 to $120 million if there's no football this season. And so what happens is when we say money, everybody thinks it's a bad thing. Like, look, all things are able to operate with money. They just are. We don't live in a socialist society where, hey, don't worry about it. If you don't have any money, we'll pick it up for you. We'll be able to like all these things. They like the stadium. You like these kids' campus, these light. You like all these lights. It's like the idea of like, hey, I gotta go to work. I do, you know, because I gotta keep the lights on. And I don't understand how money has become a bad thing. If it's the only factor, and everybody's going to get sick and some people are going to die, and then, okay, obviously there's, but that no stat tells you that there is some fear of some cardiovascular issues, which is the big reason. There's a noted doctor in Cleveland who's promoting this idea that, hey, there's going to be some major cardiovascular issues to athletes. That obviously is worthy of a deep conversation. Okay. But college football needs to be played because of the opportunities, because a sense of normalcy, because of the money. And yeah, the money, how do you think you pay for the kids that go to college and a scholarship? How do you think you pay for the stadiums that they play in? How do you think they pay for the coaches and for all the tutors? Like, it's all derived from money. Money does pay for things.
Big deal, little deal, or no deal that Jaguars holdout defensive end Yannick Ngakoue has switched agents. Remember he said he wanted out of Jacksonville?
That's a little deal. I'm switching agents. I'm blaming him for, it's a smart move because any sort of negativity, he can simply go like, hey, this is my agent. He wasn't listening to me. But at the end of the day, the agent's only as good as the client.
Big deal, little deal, or no deal, Doug. Now that the Pelicans have been eliminated from playoff contention, forward Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram are out tomorrow as both players have right knee soreness.
No deal. They're done. And so they're going to shut down all those guys.
Big deal, little deal, or no deal that Sun center DeAndre Ayton was cleared to play today after missing his coronavirus test Sunday, but he tested negative this morning. It was a weird situation with the Athletics saying that as the game was tipping off, Ayton was then cleared with his positive test this morning. Is that big deal, little deal, or no
negative
deal?
Negative test.
Yeah, sorry.
Yes. It is a big deal because you wonder, where was he? How did he miss a test yesterday?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like,
did he go fake weenie to get the test, to do the test?
Did he what? What was it?
Do you remember the Wizinator? Who was it who got caught with the Wizinator?
Oh, yeah. That was a running back.
Running back for the Broncos, I want to say.
Yeah, I thought it was. Oh my goodness. I thought he played at Oregon. Oh my gosh. Was it Ontario Smith? Is that who it was?
I
can't remember. Yes, it was Ontario Smith. All right, got the thumbs up from Ryan Music. I knew it was somewhere in that head of mine. There's not much in there, so it had to be somewhere. Big deal, little deal, or no deal, Doug. Finally, that Marcus Stroman of the Mets has opted out of the season without throwing a pitch this year. He was dealing with a strained calf muscle. He'll become a free agent this winter.
Mm.
That a big deal? Citing COVID-19 reasons.
That's a big deal because it feels very phony, right? Like you're going to become a free agent. Like, I'll just rest my arm, collect my, and I already collected some checks. And as a relief pitcher, you are so incredibly unlikely to get this thing. It's a joke. It just is, You might grab the ball, for one inning.
He is a starter.
I'm sorry. Stroman's starting. My bad.
He's a starter.
I still think as a pitcher, you're able to social distance yourself every day except the day in which you pitch, right? And then, yes, you're touching the baseball, and that can be a collector for germs or whatever, but you're not hitting, so you don't have to sit around the team. You can just go sit by yourself. Like, the idea that you're going, how are you going to get it? If you maintain proper protocols, how are you going to get it?
That's game, huh?
Game time.
This is game time on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
The DH has been eliminated, okay? I mean, not DH. The player, hitters, pitchers don't hit. So when you get done pitching, you can go sit all by yourself. You can go into the dugout. You can go all by yourself, and I don't get it. Is it time for a commissioner of college football? That's next on the Doug Gottlieb Show.